This summer, we've been talking about morals, talking about morality. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the dangers of envy, jealousy, and strife. It's a topic we need to talk about because we constantly can run into envy, jealousy, and strife. But as I was studying this, I ran into the problem of when I was trying to find a definition for envy and jealousy, they are very similar. So before we get further into this, let's get definitions for what we're talking about. Envy is a feeling of discontent or resentful longing aroused by someone else's possessions or lack or qualities or luck. That is according to the New Oxford Dictionary. For jealousy, I went to an article that is called Envy and Jealousy, What's the Difference? And they define jealousy as a feeling of fear of losing one's position or situation, threatened or protective. That's from languagetools.org, where you can find that article. Strife is bitter, sometimes violent conflict or dissension. New Oxford gave it another definition, and it said, biblical, it is defined as bickering, arguing, a heated disagreement, or an angry undercurrent. We're going to be looking at each of those topics for our three main points. But as I looked through them and as I was studying for this, I started noticing that each of the places that I looked at these for, every time there was the danger that took place, in one aspect or another, there would be something good that came from it. And we'll notice that as we talk about it. So instead of titling this as the dangers of envy, jealousy, and strife, I decided to call it the consequences of envy, jealousy, and strife. To begin with, the dangers of envy. I appreciate Luke reading that very long excerpt of sermon, but go ahead and go to Acts chapter 4 with me. Acts chapter 4. We know that Acts chapter 5 is Ananias and Sapphira, but I wanted us to look at a bit before that because that plays into what I believe is the envy here. So we see starting in Acts chapter 4 and verse 32 that the multitudes believed they were of one heart and soul. Neither of them had anything that they needed. And the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and of one soul. Neither said any of them that aught of the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. And with great power gave the apostles witness of the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. Go ahead and jump down to verse 35 with me. After talking about that they sold their stuff, it said, and laid them down at the apostles' feet, and distribution was made unto every man according as he had need. And then it focuses in on Joseph. And Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, which is being interpreted the son of consolation, a Levite, and of the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it, and brought the money, and laid it at the apostles' feet. So here we see that Joseph, or Barnabas, had done like others. He had had property, land that he owed. He sold it, and he gave the money to the apostles to help the needy saints. Go with me into Acts chapter 5. But a certain man named Ananias with Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession. So we see that Ananias and Sapphira are doing like everyone else. They're selling their property. But here's where we find their mistake. And kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost and to keep back part of the price of the land? Whilst it remained, was it not thine own? And after it was sold, was it not in thine own power? Why hast thou conceived this thing in thine heart? Thou hast not lied unto men, but unto God. So when you look at it just from a very quick glance, you see that Ananias and Sapphira are doing exactly like everyone else. They have land, they decide to sell it. In that aspect, there's nothing wrong with it. The problem is where it says they kept back part of the price. There, in the word kept back comes from the Greek nophizo. And that doesn't mean that they just kept back. That has the idea of purloin, embezzle. So what they did, they didn't just decide, oh, hey, we're only going to give part of it. They planned on only giving a certain amount and saying that it was all so that they would get the glory as everyone else. I want us to then Look at verse 4 again. Here, Peter talking to them, he says, was it not in thine own power? Was it not in thine own power? When we look at Barnabas and all the others, and Ananias and Sapphira, in all three instances, all of them had the power over their own property. They could choose to do with it as they pleased. In two instances, they did as they had said. They were going to give all. In the one instance, they only gave part. This is the thing that I find interesting. The Greek word here for power, exousia, comes from another Greek word, which has in it the idea of it is lawful. And that one comes from another word that has a mixture of a preposition, which means by, from, out of, and another one, to be. So exousia is saying that they have power by the law. So Peter here is saying, was it not in thine own power by the law to do as you pleased with your land? So Peter is telling them, it was yours to do with by the law, no matter how you chose to do it. What does that tell us about our property? Who ultimately gave the law, that being the government, the right to give out land or property as they want to? God. So our property, while it is our property, it's given to us by God. And we can think of the parable of the talents, Matthew 25, 14 through 30, where the master was going away. He gives one of his servants 5 talents. He gives another one 2 talents, and he gives one talent. What happens to the one that had the 1 talent? He didn't do anything with it. He hid it. And his master comes back, and what does he say? He says, I hid it because I was fearful of you, because you took from what was not yours. Go with me to Matthew. Matthew 24. Matthew 25. Start with me at verse 24. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. Notice his Lord's response. His Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. I thought of this because when we look at Ananias and Sapphira, they took what they thought was theirs. They decided that they were going to give part of it, and they were going to keep part of it. But they decided they were going to lie and only give back part of what God had blessed them with. That is the envy in it, is that they wanted the glory to be like everyone else. Everyone to say, oh, well, Ananias and Sapphira did like everyone else, but they still wanted to have, they wanted to embezzle part of their money. And when you think of embezzle, it makes me constantly think of, for those of us that are older, the Enron scandal. They were doing things the right way, but they were skimming some off the top. They were doing things in another way so that they would have a little extra money on the side. We can think of this in politics today, in just about any aspect of life. A person that owns a business, he owns that business. However, if he starts using that money or doing things in a manner that is unlawful to make extra money, he's not allowed to do that because he is given permission by the law, and God gave the law that permission to give him that. So we see no feeds, though. Embezzle. That was the problem with Ananias and Sapphira. That is what led to their death. Go with me back to Acts 5. Notice verse 5 with me. Acts 5 and verse 5. And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost, and great fear came on all them that heard these things. Brother Murr had just talked about how he was scared to come before God. This is the same aspect. They weren't afraid of God, but they had reverential fear. They were in awe of what God could do. I find it interesting that here, to my knowledge, this is the first example during the Christian era of someone sinning and being punished to death almost instantaneously, as if God was still showing the Jews of this time, hey, like I taught you throughout the Old Testament, the punishment for sin is death. But yet, as I'd said, consequences. Notice with me verses 12 through 16 now of Acts chapter 5. This is when I first started noticing that God can take the dangers of sin and use it for good. Start with me at verse 11, actually. We see again that it says, "And great fear came upon all the church, and upon as many as heard these things. And by the hand of the apostles were many signs and wonders wrought among the people. And they were all with one accord in Solomon's porch. And of the rest durst no man join himself to them, but the people magnified them. And believers were the more added to the Lord, multitudes both of men and women, insomuch that they brought forth the sick into the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that at the least the shadow of Peter passing by might overshadow some. There came also a multitude out of the cities round about unto Jerusalem, bringing sick folks and them which were vexed with unclean spirits, and they were healed every one." If you're taking notes, go ahead and write there, write in your notes, Acts 1 and verse 8. And notice at that time when Christ is talking to his apostles, how he says that the gospel will go out from Jerusalem into all the world. That's something interesting that I saw, is that multitudes came from the cities around Jerusalem, but it started in Jerusalem. So here we see that although Ananias and Sapphira had to die for their sin, the church grew. The apostles were esteemed because of what they did. The sick were healed. You can also mark down Mark 16, verses 17 through 20, where it talks of signs confirming the word. And then we can think of the church grew. Throughout the first several chapters of Acts, we constantly see the church growing. Although there is much struggle and much stress, much death going on, you could say, the church constantly grew. So envy led to Ananias and Sapphira's death, but it also led to the church growing in faith, growing in respect for God and his word. We can then look at jealousy. Go with me to John chapter 11. Just before this, Christ himself had gone to raise Lazarus from the dead. And when we look at verses 45 and 46, it says, "Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Jesus did believed on him. But some of them went their way to the Pharisees and told them what things Jesus had done." So Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. He was dead for 4 days. He raises him from the dead, and what happens? Some believed, but some went to the Pharisees and told them what happened. And then this leads to the Pharisees and Caiaphas, who was at the time the high priest, planning to kill Christ. "Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council and said, What do we? For this man doth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and nation. And one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, Ye know nothing at all, nor consider it that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not. And this," notice this, "and this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation," and not for that nation only, "but that also he should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad." So we see Caiaphas, the high priest, and others. They know that Christ just raised someone from the dead, but do they talk about what a great miracle he just did? Or do they start thinking of, if this gets out, if we do nothing about this, what's going to happen? Our place our place of importance is going to be taken away. Jealousy. Many believed because of what they saw, and then they plotted murder. Many believed. The others that went to the Pharisees, to Caiaphas, led to them plotting to kill Jesus, as it says later on. Notice verses 51 through 53 again, and notice our good. Emphasis on our good that came from this. And this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation, and not for that nation only, but that also he should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad. Then from that day forth they took counsel together for to put him to death. When we see him talking about not for that nation only, but to bring the children of God that were scattered abroad, it made me think of James chapter 1 and verse 1, where James is writing to the 12 tribes that were scattered abroad. There have been some that have told me that it's literally they're talking about the 12 tribes. I take it to mean that it's talking of Christians, the spiritual Israel. From this jealousy, we find that Christ was sacrificed to reconcile us to God. Because of their jealousy, we have become children of God. You can write in your notes Galatians 3, 26 through 29, also James 1, 1. And because of our adoption, so long as we remain faithful, our name shall be written in the Lamb's Book of Life. All because of the jealousy of a few. We have been given the greatest blessing that we can be given. All out of jealousy. Jealousy is still dangerous. We can look at Genesis 4, 8, where it led to death. Jealousy will lead to death. It always leads to sin, James 1, 13 and 14. And what does sin lead to? Death. Not just physical death, but spiritual death. Spiritual death, James 1, 15. So jealousy will lead to death. Envy will lead to death. Let us look at strife now. Strife. Go to Acts 15 with me. And notice the last portion of James of Acts chapter 15. Here, Barnabas and Paul are about to go out on another missionary journey. Barnabas wants to take, if I'm correct, his cousin or a family member, John Mark. Paul says, I don't want to take him. He left us already once. He'll probably do it again. And it says there, and the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. So Barnabas took Mark and sailed into Cyprus. And Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. So here we see strife. They didn't talk bad about each other. They didn't act as we normally would. They decided, hey, we're going to go our separate ways. We're going to keep doing God's will. That's what we normally focus on. Their plan was ruined by their contention over John Mark. Mark down in your notes, 2 Samuel 19, 9 through 14. And you can also write down Proverbs 26 through 21. Because strife will always lead to division. Strife will always lead to division, no matter what. The word used for contention here can mean incitement unto good or dispute and anger. That's according to a Strong's dictionary. So here Barnabas and Paul disputed over John Mark out of anger, yet God would use it for incitement to good. And that good was for Paul directly. We see him later talk highly of John Mark, saying that he is useful to me. At that time, Paul didn't see any use in John Mark. God saw it. And later on, we will read the book of Mark, which John Mark wrote to the Romans of Christ's life. Because of this strife, the gospel was spread. It was already being spread, but it spread faster now. And other congregations are built up in the gospel. Because instead of there just being one missionary journey, there was now two missionary journeys. There's always danger that comes from sin. that's an unfortunate case of life. But when we look at the word, we need to remember that although there are dangers, 1 John 1:6-9 and 1 John 2:1-2, we have someone that can help us go through those dangers. Nothing is impossible with God, Luke 1:37. We just need to remember and not be blinded by the dangers of sin to the point that God cannot bring about good from it. We need to remember that God can bring about good from it. But we also need to watch ourselves and make sure that we don't think like some that we have done so much evil that God cannot bring about good for us. Questions? Comments? Yes.
I think it's interesting that distinction between envy and jealousy. Envy is something that doesn't belong to you, almost like covetous. It's wanting something that is not yours. But jealousy is over something that does belong to you. And I find it interesting because God says that he's a jealous God, not that he's an envious God. Mm-hmm.
Good point. We will go on then. Tobias, yeah.
Some great points you made. The fact that everything that you gave, envy, jealousy, and strife, all of them led to the furtherance of the gospel. The envy, great fear came upon them. They continued in the gospel. And they fought and killed Jesus because of his death, burial, and resurrection. Now he had the gospel. And they, Paul and Barnabas, had that little split. The gospel was further. So in every instance, it was just further. And I think that's why they did nothing against the truth before the truth.
That's interesting. And that is why I originally decided to change it from the dangers to the consequences. Because every time I looked at something that happened that was a danger, I kept on seeing that God was using that danger to still bring about, whether it be his will, whether it be his plan, whether it be the gospel.
I think it's important too that we remember that the jealousy of God is a righteous jealousy. It's not to be confused with man's jealousy of an unrighteous nature. Jealousy is this sense of feeling sorry for that which I do not have. It's this internal sin. Envy is the outward manifestation of jealousy when it's active upon an individual. A prime example of this happened to me when I was a younger man. I went and found a big-screen TV and it was in the trash can. There was nothing wrong with it except it had a crack in the frame. It had a rich man who lived next to me, and I asked him why he was throwing it. He said it very gently in the trash can rather than throwing it in. I said, "Was there anything wrong with your television?" And he said, "No." I said, "Why are you throwing it away?" He said, "There's a crack right here, and my warranty didn't cover it, so I'm throwing it away and get me a new one." So here I come with my wheelbarrow. I'm 19 years old, and I'm about to get me a brand new television. And when I went out there with my wheelbarrow, he said, "What did you do?" I said, "Well, if there's nothing wrong with it, you threw it away, you don't want it out in my head." He said, "Oh, no." He went quickly into his shed, grabbed a baseball bat, and smashed it to pieces. That was evil. That was this outward action of, if I can't have it, neither are you. The Pharisees were all about themselves. If we can't have the power that he is taking from us, it's all about themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, because they couldn't have it, what were they going to do? They were going to put the man to death. They couldn't see the blessing right there in front of him. He had raised Lazarus from the dead. And that envy